If there is another vaccine that is more efficient, I'll not put my life at risk. So I'll go to another clinic and find another vaccine.
Chinese vaccine shunned in South America. It's Friday, October 1st. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube are great places to find us online. Also ahead, fishing for fairness. Vietnamese Americans help relocated Afghans. TikTok turret trouble. Clean energy technologies. Self-navigating drones. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Brazil was among the countries facing big difficulties in purchasing COVID vaccines early this year, and with fatalities soaring, its leaders bet on China's CoronaVac to jumpstart its immunization program. But the Chinese vaccine is shunned by many Brazilians after studies indicated a low efficacy rate, so much so that Brazilian authorities banned the distribution of millions of doses this month, pending further study. For VOA in Sao Paulo, Edgar Maciel reports Brazil is making some adaptations that could be starting to yield positive results.
The ugly duckling of vaccines, that's how many consider CoronaVac here. Developed by the Chinese laboratory Sinovac, the vaccine has one of the lowest efficacy percentages against COVID-19, just 50.38%, almost outside the limits of what is acceptable by the World Health Organization. The Chinese vaccine was the first used in Brazil with a partnership with Butantan Institute Research Center in São Paulo. It became the most widely available in the country, but also the most despised. Every day, long lines form at São Paulo vaccination sites, but they instantly disappear when people discover only the CoronaVac was available.
If there is another vaccine that is more efficient, I'll not put my life at risk. So I'll go to another clinic and find another vaccine.
Earlier this month, Brazil's health regulator Anvisa suspended and recalled 12 million doses produced at an authorized plant in China.
In an attempt to change the vaccine's image and boost the public confidence, Butantan is investing in studies on CoronaVac effectiveness. One of those studies is in Serrana City, outside São Paulo. All residents over the age of 18 got CoronaVac shots. After months, the results have been positive.
The Butantan Institute Project S, as it is called, showed that the number of deaths dropped 95% in the second quarter of the year. The institute also says the mass vaccination also reduced hospital admissions by 86%. In the last month, Serrana has not registered any deaths from COVID-19, according to São Paulo Health Secretary data.
We were living in a moment of the pandemic in Brazil where reducing hospitalization and the number of deaths was fundamental. When we have a vaccine with efficacy above 80% for severe cases, such as CoronaVac, we see that it was a key element in improving the indicators of the pandemic in the country. And studies like Serrana have shown effectiveness across the population to reduce the risk of death.
But with new variants gaining strength globally, CoronaVac will face another test to its reputation. Serrana, in September, registered two Delta variant infections. Both patients were vaccinated and had mild symptoms. In this lab at Butantan Institute, scientists say the first signs are encouraging, but the final results will be announced next month. More than 82 million, or 38% of Brazil's people, are now fully vaccinated, surpassing the worldwide average. Of those vaccinated, 4 out of 10 Brazilians were immunized with AstraZeneca, roughly one-third with CoronaVac and 21% with the Pfizer vaccine, according to government figures. Until recently, Brazil was one of the world's COVID-19 flashpoints. But as vaccinations accelerate, experts say the trend appears to be reversing, with the average daily number deaths though in September, dipping below 900 from a high of nearly 5,000 in April. Edgar Maciel for VOA News, São Paulo.
Find out more on this and all of our stories on VOA Asia by following our Twitter stream at VOA Asia, also on Facebook and voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Taliban and China decry Afghan airspace violations by U.S. At event with UN envoy, U.S. says committed to Taiwan's international participation. Rohingya community leader shot dead in Bangladesh refugee camp. Australian state blames illegal parties for COVID-19 surge. In post-coup Myanmar, citizens fight to get online. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and so much more by visiting us at Facebook at VOA Asia. Also stop by our Instagram and Twitter accounts and the voanews.com website. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. China is the world's largest seafood consumer, and its fleet often fishes waters claimed by South Korea. When South Korean authorities try to enforce international regulations, they often meet fierce resistance. Sung-hyuk Park filed this report with information provided by Hyungjin Kim in Seoul.
South Korean fishermen have seen this too often. An old boat near the inter-Korean maritime border steams across the Yellow Sea and heads towards South Korea's territorial waters, also known as the West Sea, to fish.
There are so many Chinese fishing ships crowding near the island. I make a point not going to the other side of the island. I don't just want to see them. There are so many.
South Korean fishermen say the Chinese fleet ignores international norms by overfishing and even taking egg-bearing females.
Chinese fishermen snatch up all living things. We release the ones that fall outside legal sides, but they take everything because they are operating in someone else's waters. They take every moving organism, every form of marine life.
The Chinese boats fish near the maritime boundary between South and North Korea. They know South Korean authorities can't cross that line. But the chase can turn dangerous.
It's difficult to regulate them. Chinese fishermen exercise brute force, such as hanging metal booms on their ships or using deadly weapons to keep South Korean Coast Guard officials from boarding.
VOA's Korean service contacted the Chinese embassy in South Korea for official comment, but received no response. In the last 10 years, South Korean authorities have caught almost 4,000 Chinese ships fishing illegally. Many more evaded capture.
Through the cooperation between the governments of South Korea and China, the cases of illegal fishing decreased since 2015. But since last year, China's illegal fishing significantly increased as monitoring was sidelined because of COVID-19 prevention measures.
Tracking the Chinese fishing vessels is difficult. Many are unregistered in China.
The majority of Chinese fishing fleets operating illegally in South Korean waters cannot operate within Chinese waters. Either they don't have a permit from the Chinese government or they are unregistered vessels that stole the registration numbers of the other Chinese vessels.
As officials from the two nations search for solutions, South Korean fishermen see little progress.
When South Korean fishing ships approach the South Korean maritime boundary or go beyond it, there is a big fuss. But when Chinese fishing boats move about freely near the border, it drives us crazy.
As the game of cat and mouse continues, Sung-hyuk Park for VOA News, Washington.
Still ahead on VOA Asia, a former refugee group helps a current one. Happening now in Asia, North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has dismissed the United States' offer to resume a dialogue, but he says he is open to improving ties with South Korea. North Korea has just tested what it calls a hypersonic ballistic missile. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's nice to have you with us on this Friday on VOA Asia. We're glad you're with us. Many Vietnamese Americans in Southern California are stepping up to help Afghan refugees. Titi Tran spoke with residents of Orange County's Little Saigon and Afghan refugees now living in a nearby Afghan-American neighborhood and shares what they said.
The similarities were so, it was so apparent.
The feeling are very similar.
The dramatic images of Afghans at the Kabul airport seeking to flee their country as U.S. troops prepare to leave after 20 years of war looks very familiar to many Vietnamese Americans.
I remember carrying my son, our family separated. When I saw the image of a child being passed over the fence, it was exactly like that. That was the family who went to the boat and passed their child over to the boat, and the boat left. So the child went with the boat. The parents were left behind. The family was separated. And those images are repeating themselves now.
Barisha Danish was separated from her son for 24 hours at the Kabul airport. Americans there helped reunite the family.
I remember crying to God to wake me from this nightmare. Thank God that it was then coordinated and we got our son. My only hope in this war was to get my son and nothing else.
My sister working for the U.S. government, she and my family, they have been moving to a center to really, ready to evacuate, waiting for the airplane. And then she has been abandoned with the whole family. So that painful feeling come back to me, and that's how I feel for those who left behind in Afghanistan, especially for those who working closely with the U.S. government.
Offers of aid overwhelmed Little Saigon community leaders like Nam Lok. Vietnamese and Afghan musicians performed at a recent fundraiser that drew people from the two Orange County refugee communities.
I received an email from Nam Lok about encouraging all of us Vietnamese people to step up and help the Afghan refugees.
The money raised at the fundraiser will go to Lutheran Immigration and Refugee Services and Afghan Literacy Foundation. As of now, that's more than $160,000. Donations keep coming in.
They really feel our pain, what is going on in our countries.
Ehsan Aman, who arrived in the U.S. in 1992, has this advice for the Afghan newcomers.
They have to start a job as soon as possible. That's number one thing they have to do to stand up on their own feet. And secondly, they should not be very sensitive about cultural and social issues, about discrimination and stuff like that.
As of today, more than 100 Vietnamese American families have pledged to either sponsor or donate to help these newly arrived Afghan refugees. Titi Cheng for VOA News, Orange County, California.
You'll find much more on this story at VOA Asia Facebook.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Defense officials from China and the United States have concluded 2 days of talks in a small sign of progress amid a continuing sharp downturn in relations. China blamed the U.S. for continuous provocation and containment of China. You'll find this and all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Doctors around the world have seen an unusual rise in tourette-like tic disorders over the past year. Matt Dibble reports on how social media may be the trigger.
Yeah, boom, boom, bah, bah. TikTok, the video sharing app, is the home of talented pets, dance challenges, and lately, a lot of videos about Tourette syndrome. Tourette is a neurological condition that causes people to make unwanted sounds and repetitive movements, called tics. The TikTok creators have raised awareness about the condition. Videos with the hashtag Tourette's have been viewed over 4 billion times. But their popularity may have unintended consequences. In the fall of 2020, Dr. Tamara Pringsheim and her colleagues noticed something unusual at their Tourette clinic in Alberta, Canada.
We were receiving, up to 17 referrals a week
for young people who had suddenly developed tic-like behaviors.
Tourette syndrome is genetic. Males are more frequently affected, with tics typically appearing in early childhood and increasing over the years.
Whereas in these kids, predominantly girls, they reached a peak of severity within one or two or just a few more days.
The colleague suspected that something might be triggering the wave. After a tip from her teenage daughter, Dr. Pringsheim looked at TikTok.
When I started watching some of the videos, I'm like, I have like five kids who are doing this exact tic. One young person told me that it only started after she spent the whole night watching all these TikTok videos.
Over the past year, clinics in England, Australia, Germany, and the United States have reported a similar phenomenon.
The tics tend to start with big tics, big motor tics, like hitting tics or scratching tics or arm flailing tics.
The videos may act as a model for people who are susceptible because of other factors, says John Piacentini, who sees patients in Los Angeles.
A lot of the kids that we're seeing or that are being seen with these tics report pretty high levels of depression and anxiety, and a lot of it may be pandemic related.
And though some of the videos use humor, living with a tic disorder can be very challenging.
I've had patients who've dropped out of school, dropped out of college, had to quit their job. The level of impairment has been very high, higher than many of my patients with Tourette syndrome.
Much is unknown about this condition, and research is just beginning. But as doctors consider the best approaches for treatment, the first step seems clear.
Well, the first thing we want to do is we want to have them take a break from social media.
Experts' recommendation to each other is to take a closer look at social media, as this study from the University of Chicago concludes. Knowledge of media content is essential in managing patients in the current environment. Matt Dibble for VOA News, San Francisco.
Making headlines regarding Asia, dozens of cargo ships from Asia continue to wait outside ports near Los Angeles amid an ongoing supply chain bottleneck. The issue has raised concerns among retailers about inventory shortages as they prepare for the holiday shopping season. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a bunch of new technologies are popping up that could help bring global energy-related carbon dioxide emissions to net zero by 2050, and all need investment. Governments worldwide are having to decide which one suits their geography and how much they can spend on a given technology. We hear more with VOA's Mariama Diallo.
In September, some energy companies that have been trying to rid the atmosphere of carbon celebrated some big milestones. In Iceland, two companies launched one of the largest direct air carbon capture and storage plants.
With a capacity of 4,000 tons of CO2 that are captured from the air every year, so that's the nominal capacity, and we are then handing over this CO2 to our partners from Carbfix, who inject it underground, and the CO2 there is mineralized with the basalt rock, so and it's turned into stone, literally.
Fusion, like direct air carbon capture, is another potential new development in alternative energy. Fusion is a carbon-free energy source based on the same principles that powered the Earth's sun. In France, a giant fusion experiment involving the largest magnet so far arrived at the International Thermonuclear Experimental Reactor, or ITER, an international nuclear fusion research and engineering mega project. A big step, ITER says, toward its goal of producing electricity without a radioactive byproduct. Laban Koblenz, spokesperson for ITER, says it's all about priorities.
ITER is expected to cost 20 billion euros, give or take, for construction. Right now, Europe is importing 1 billion euros of petroleum every day. So they're paying for ITER basically every 3 weeks.
Earlier this year, the International Energy Agency warned that climate pledges by governments to date could fall short of what is required to bring global energy-related CO2 emissions to net zero by 2050. Cambridge University's Laura Diaz-Anadon.
And if we don't have a clean electricity, then, you know, that's not going to reduce emissions. So the first focus would be decarbonizing the power sector. And this means that renewables and storage and some technologies that can provide firm capacity of power are going to be really important.
AJ Gambier, a senior research fellow at the Grantham Institute for Climate Change at Imperial College London, says he believes that so far, two energy sources have made considerable leaps.
Solar photovoltaics, wind turbines, those are penetrating into energy systems quite fast around the world at the moment. They're falling in cost extremely rapidly, so they're proving very promising in terms of low carbon options.
But challenges remain when it comes to storing energy in the long term.
And so, for example, we've made a huge amount of progress in terms of the cost and performance of lithium-ion batteries. Over the past 10 years, the cost of lithium-ion batteries has gone down by around 80-85%, mainly because of the applications in the electric vehicle market.
You know, you can't have batteries at the moment that are economic enough or big enough to store all of the electricity needs that a country will require over the winter months, for example. And there we look to things like long duration energy storage. We already have that in terms of pumped hydropower, but then we have a raft of other technologies which are either existent or being developed. We have this big role for potentially hydrogen as a store of energy.
The 2021 United Nations Climate Change Conference, or COP26, will take place in November in Glasgow, Scotland. Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
Small, self-navigating drones designed to think and move like bees could revolutionize the future of agriculture, search and rescue missions, and much more. VOA's Julie Tabo gives us an exclusive look behind the scenes.
Small autonomous drones that can fly and navigate like bees are the vision of the future for a team of researchers at the University of Maryland.
They are very small flying mechanisms that are equipped with cameras, sensors, and computer, and they are able to perceive the world, think about it, make decisions, and act accordingly.
Yeah, I think we should make the drone a little bit smaller.
Soon, these self-navigating drones will be able to help pollinate flowers or work in environments that are dangerous for humans.
When this technology reaches the market, it will be very useful for dealing with search and rescue operations in terms of earthquakes, with inspections of bridges, with agriculture.
The drones are not controlled by a human with a joystick, but instead they use computer vision to see obstacles in their path and artificial intelligence to determine the best way around or through them. They've been designed to mimic the behavior of birds and bees to move and navigate through small openings. And they'll be launched in the field from a larger drone designed like a beehive to perform a multitude of tasks.
These drones open up a world of possibilities because if you want to deploy 1,000 drones, which are large, you want 1,000 operators, right? With these smaller ones, you just have a big drone and it carries 1,000 of these and goes to a point and it will just deploy it automatically.
The bee drones can travel more than 6 kilometers round trip. And while there are concerns about the potential misuse of these little machines, for now, the team is focusing on all the good they can be capable of. Julie Tabo, VOA News.
That's our program for today and this week. Thanks for listening to VOA Asia. Continue online. Find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. We also thank our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, and Chris Cascao. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a super day ahead. Be safe. Be well.